Let's do this, the Cult of Hockey podcast, by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm Bruce McCurdy, and tonight I'm flying solo as David Staples is otherwise engaged tonight and left it to me to report on a truly rotten hockey game. Let's see. Edmonton Oilers got utterly crushed 5-1 by the Anaheim Ducks, one of the few teams below Edmonton in the standings, a team that got beaten 6-1 by Calgary Flames last night, a team that came to town minus two of their most recognizable core players in Ryan Getzlaf and Ryan Kessler, as well as defenseman Josh Manson, other players missing from a team that's been devastated by injuries throughout the year. And they played a more rested Edmonton Oilers team that isn't traveling anywhere. It's the fifth game of a five-game homestand, and the Oilers flat out stunk for 50 minutes of this game, 40 anyway. They had it going on for a little bit for a few shifts where they carried the play in the Anaheim territory. But by and large, they were out-quicked. It's the third time recently that a team with a lousy record has come into Edmonton and quite simply skated the Oilers into the ice. And it's hard to believe that a team with Connor McDavid as its central player is not a fast team, but the Edmonton Oilers are not a fast team, and when they're playing a fast team, it shows up in spades, and it did tonight. So I'm going to keep it short and fairly sour tonight. We have our two good things, two bad things, two numbers that we report after each game, and in David's absence, instead of us doing one each, I get to do both of each. So here goes, the good thing, the very good thing, the only good thing, the really good thing, which I would change, wouldn't trade for a 5-1 win over the Ducks. Connor McDavid got up after taking a horrendous knee-on-knee collision in center ice that sent him cartwheeling spectacularly through the air and crashing to the ice. Terrifying sight, to tell the truth, almost really no matter who it was, but the fact it was McDavid at that speed just made the whole thing that much more of a launch. And not only did he got up and nearly scored. About 4 or 5 seconds later, had a great scoring chance and was stoned by the best goalie on the night, which will surprise you to learn is not playing for the Oilers. And that would be John Gibson. He made a great stop off of McDavid there. But I got to say, McDavid didn't have a whole lot going on after that. And whether the hit took something out of him, whether he's a bit sore, whether he just was a little discombobulated from cartwheeling through the air, whatever. It just wasn't his night. It wasn't their night. And what the main thing is, he did get up, and hopefully he's okay to carry on. At least he was able to finish this game and, in fact, lead the Oilers forwards in ice time. As usual, it's him and Leon about a half minute apart, with Connor in the lead in this game, 22 minutes and 8 seconds. So that's the one good thing. The other good thing, I'm going to give a shout-out to Adam Larson, who, other than one horrible giveaway that wound up costing the Oilers a goal, and obviously that's a factor, but the positive thing about Adam Larson was, and it really stood out in this game that the team didn't have much happening, was his intensity and work rate that he brought throughout, which included, 3 shots to lead the defenseman, but 7 hits, and including several absolutely punishing darts. Like, he took no prisoners, was just laying out his body for the team as he does on an ongoing basis. And as an old goalie, I'm kind of a fan of the old school defenseman that will punish the other team's forwards who take liberties. But as a fan of Larson, I'll say that he had a poor year, and tonight he had another poor result with that bad turnover. He brought it hard, and good on Adam Larson. Okay, bad things. Where do I start? I've only got two. I think probably the safer route is simply to say the team's overall effort against the weakened Anaheim Ducks, as described earlier. And other than a few minutes in the early going, the Oilers were outshot, outplayed, outchanced, out-hustled, out-goaltended, out-coached, out-managed, for sure. And they took it on the chin. Another embarrassing loss right in their own barn. I think now that's 12 games they've lost at home by 3 or more goals. And they've got, this week they played 3 home games against a team that played in Calgary the night before. Each time the team was playing the back-to-back. And the Oilers won the first game against the Kings, worst team in the West. Then they lost in the shootout to Dallas on their back-to-back. And now they got thumped by Anaheim. And so 3 times the Oilers technically had the advantage of both rest and not travel, the home team advantage. But just nothing to show for it. And they have consistently dropped the ball, crapped the bed, whatever phrase you want to use, when the schedule maker does give them an advantage and they just don't take advantage. And they sure have not made Rogers' place a difficult place for opponents. Other than that one playoff year when the Oilers were a very tough, hard team to play against, and when they got a lead, they held the lead. And this year, not happening. And they're now reduced to 500 in their home ice. And by 500, I mean 18-18-4, which is another way of saying 18-22. So at best, they win 19 out of their 41 home games. And it's just a sad state of affairs in Edmonton that they've been getting dominated in their own rink for years. And it's, I guess, a reflection of where they are in the standings. But I bet if you rank them year after year, they'd have a lower ranking among home records. Like, there might be a couple teams below them in home record, if that. And I didn't actually look it up for this podcast, but they're right down there. Even though they're like 8 or 9 teams from the bottom, they're one of the very worst on home ice. Oh, the other bad thing. I'll say netminding. So rather than pointing the fingers at one guy, it's actually 2 guys, because one started the game and got thumped. And the other one came on in relief, and he made some saves, but each of them let in at least one, well, exactly one in the case of Stolarz, goal that they're not going to be proud of on shots from outside. I actually had a little bit of sympathy for Mikko Koskinen on the first goal, even though at first glance it looked like he tried to make a glove save. It hit the cuff of his glove, it hit his shoulder, and it dribbled over the goal line. But before that happened, the shot right at source bounced off of the boot of Andrei Sekera's skate and changed direction right at the source. So instead of being a low shot like it was coming off the stick, it rose quickly, and Koskinen tried to react to that and slightly overcompensated. And as an old goalie, again, I'll say that is a tough save, those ones that get tipped right at the source, because you're reading the shot off the stick and then you're reacting to your own initial reaction. And so I felt a little bit of empathy for him there. And of course, even before the puck went to the goal scorer, Corey Perry, the only reason Anaheim got the puck with control in Edmonton's zone was the pass in the neutral zone hit the linesman and bounced right to Adam Henrique. And then the two of them came cruising up the middle. And Henrique passed to Perry, and his shot, as I say, hit Sekera's skate, the cuff of Koskinen's glove, the shoulder of Koskinen. So three different touches by Oilers, and it still wound up in the net. So one of those kind of nights. But too many nights where the Edmontons had the second best goaltending between the two teams. It certainly happened against Dallas last game, and plenty of other times that they're just not quite up to the other team's level. Now, this game, you could have traded goalies in this game, and I still think probably Anaheim would have won, but it wouldn't have been 5-1. Let's put it that way. Enough said about that. Okay. Two numbers. One, I'm going to go with 500, which is a number of career points for Milan Lucic, who finally earned his 500th point on the one Edmonton goal that cut the deficit to a mere 5-1 in the third period. But it was a good sort of Lucic-style play where he battled, held the puck under physical pressure, came out of the corner with it and fed it into the slot, and Sam Gagne was able to fire a good one-timer that actually beat Gibson. But for all that Lucic gets deserved criticism heaped his way, 500 points in a career, that's a massive milestone. And good on him for finally getting there. He's got 103 of those points as an Oiler, 50 his first year, 34 his second, 19 this year with four to play. And the arrows are pointing hard south on Milan Lucic with 4 years to go on a $6 million contract. So while we're talking about numbers, too, on those numbers for a while, it's a bad, bad situation. He got high annual average value. He got long-term. He got no movement clauses. And he got almost buyout-proof with bonus structure. So as contracts go, that's basically the four horsemen of the apocalypse of things that, you know, makes it almost impossible to get out of. So it's that's a debate that'll go on well into the summer, I'm sure. But the nature of the beast is the contract is bad. The player does have his moments. Tonight he had one, and it's a nice milestone. So good on you, Milan, for getting to 500 points. And my other number is zero. And zero is the number of shots taken by seven different Oilers forwards in this game. Forwards, seven forwards, never got a shot on net. Numerical order, Colby Cave, Jujhar Khaira, Tobias Reeder, Kyle Brodziak, Alex Chiasson, Zach Cassian, Joseph Gambardella. So basically, you know, more than half of the forward core. And the other five guys that did get shots, five, as it turns out, five highest paid forwards on the team. Gagne, six. Nugent Hopkins, five. Lucic, three. Dreisaitl, three. McDavid, two. So those guys were at least peppering shots on Gibson. But the rest of the forwards have got, like, there's no offense whatsoever happening with these guys. They had, let's see now, four forwards, Khaira, Brodziak, Chiasson, and Gambardella. They never even had a shot attempt of any kind throughout the whole game. They all played at least 9 minutes. So it's not like they didn't have any chance to move the needle. They just didn't move it. So, and zero, to extend, is the exact amount of room for error that the Oilers have before they are formally mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. In fact, I stupidly jumped the gun in a post-game tweet. I did a miscalculation and thought they were mathematically eliminated. But the fact remains, they're 8 points behind with four to play. They have 31 regulation overtime wins to 34 for for the team that they're trailing in eighth place, Colorado. But if the Oilers win four games and they win them all in regulation overtime, no shootout, that will give them the tiebreaker, 35-34, if and only if Colorado goes 0-4-0 in their last four games. Even a point, a loser point or anything, will put them above any area that Edmonton can reach. So the likelihood of that, the likelihood of Oilers going 4-0-0 in a week where they play Las Vegas, Colorado, San Jose, and Calgary is vanishingly small. The likelihood of Colorado going 0-4-0 is pretty darn small. They got a tough schedule too, but the time for outside help is long gone. They have Arizona and Minnesota playing each other in their next game. Whoever wins that game has to lose all the rest of their games. Whoever loses that game can win one of their remaining games and lose all the rest. And then in between, there's teams like Chicago, Vancouver that are needed to lose games as well. So the mathematical chance of that happening, all the right results happening, has got to be a decimal point with several zeros after it, percent of it working out. Like, even if you said all those games are, there's no favorites or underdogs, there's no better teams or weaker teams, just you had to coin flip enough times to get those results to fall, all those tumblers to fall in place for the Oilers. It's just like winning the 6-4-9 or something. Just, it ain't happening. It's over. But technically, mathematically, it isn't over, and I was wrong, so I got to eat that one too on a all-around miserable night for Oil and Oil fans. All this, all these seasons, losing seasons, one after another. I think I'm getting punch drunk and starting to fade. Man, oh man. Anyways, with that cheery note, I will say I named this the More in Sorrow Than in Anger podcast. That's a line from Hamlet, Shakespeare's 1603 play, so it's been around for a while. And it's just saying, it's like when your parents say, I'm not mad at you, I'm just disappointed. And that's basically how I'm feeling about my Edmonton Oilers at this point. Another season, another year older and deeper in debt, or however that line goes. And they have to find several important solutions to turn things north, and they got to do it fast because patience is running out in wherever you look. So on that cheery note, I will say thanks for listening. Thanks for hanging in there with all of us Oil fans through these low, many disappointing results. And in the meantime, we'll have David back on Monday night when we have our next game. And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.